After a May as grey and cold as December, June came in that year of 1294, sunny and warm, and full of birds and blossoms and all the other happy things the songs praise May for. Adam Quatermain, who had been looking for his father ever since Easter, thought that now he would surely come. Every morning when he rolled out of his bed in the long dormitory where the schoolboys slept, he said to himself, "Today he's coming. I know it." And every night, disappointed but not daunted, he put himself to sleep, making up stories about how his father would come next day. Sometimes he made him come just at the end of choir practice, sometimes at the beginning of the lesson in grammar, sometimes in the middle of dinner when the boys ate their meat and pottage in silence, while a master read aloud in Latin from the Lives of the Saints. However Adam's stories began, they all ended with Roger the Minstrel taking Adam right out of school. Across the courtyard they would go striding, Adam with his own harp over his shoulder and his father's viol under his arm. Through the gateway they would pass, and over the river to the highway that led to London and all the wide free world. It was a famous school that the monks kept in the Abbey of St. Alban, but Adam had had enough of it. 5 long months ago, his father had left him there while he himself went to France, to the minstrel school held in Lent each year at Cambrai, where he would learn new romances to tell to the lords and ladies of England. Roger Quatermain was no ordinary minstrel, picking up an uncertain penny, telling rough yarns in inn yards and marketplaces, filling in gaps in his memory with juggling and tumbling and piping as the poorer sort did. He could play the viol. He could chant long romances in French about King Alexander or Charlemagne and his knights, or the British King Arthur and the search for the Holy Grail. He was welcome at manor houses and at great feasts in castles, and everywhere people gave him rich gifts, a length of cloth for a surcoat, a purse full of silver pennies, or a gold clasp to fasten his mantle. He went attended by a boy to carry his viol, and to sing with him when there were songs in the tales, or harp a little in the interludes. And that boy, from his 8th birthday till his 11th last February, had been Roger's son, Adam. So Adam watched eagerly for his father, and talked endlessly about him to the other boys in school. He always spoke of him as Roger the Minstrel, as if everyone must have heard of him. And if he was a little cocky about being the son of such a man, they forgave him. They liked Adam because he was tussle-headed and snub-nosed, wide-mouthed and square-jawed, because his grey eyes were honest and twinkling, because he sang so well and knew so many stories, and because, though he boasted about Roger, he had a humble enough opinion of himself. They watched for Roger too, and they all expected him, from Adam's description, to be as handsome as Earl Gilbert, who came sometimes to the Abbey, but kinder, as brave as the king, but younger, and as grand as the abbot himself, but more comfortable. 3 things Adam had to comfort him while the good June days went slowly to waste: his harp, his friend Perkin, and his dog Nick. His harp was the small harp of the time, which he carried slung by a thong over his shoulder. His father had taught him to play it when he was a very little boy, living up in the north in a stone house in the shadow of York Minster. Here at the Abbey School, he kept it on the shelf at the head of his bed. On rainy days, when they had free times in the hall after the long hours of lessons, the boys would send him to get it, and he would pluck its strings and tell what he could remember of the tales he had heard from Roger the Minstrel. At first, the boys from the Midlands made fun of his northern dialect, but he turned to French a few times and silenced them. Not many of these sons of Franklins and Burgesses knew the language of the court folk. Or he would sing the verses of a song they all knew, and they would join in on the refrains. Sometimes they would make up more stanzas of their own. The masters didn't like it very well, for the church officially disapproved of minstrels' tales. If they heard him, they would stop him, or make him tell stories about the saints instead. But oftener they just pretended not to hear him. His stories were about courtesy and chivalry. never the rude Fabliau making mock of holy things that the poorer sort of minstrel told.